Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that, cools up to 8 times faster, and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed, plus free home delivery with any bed and base. Ends Monday. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, I get the name of the show right every single time the first time. Oh, we don't have to stop and redo it because I made a mistake. That's crazy. That would never happen. Not here on The Stack where
also,
we're reviewing.
Yeah. You're so professional after all these years, you wouldn't bring it up as a mistake. You know what I mean?
That was certainly just, not. Yeah. That would just be no reason to introduce the show that way. That's just confusing for people.
Plus a waste of everybody's time. You know what I mean?
A huge waste of everybody's time. So I'm glad we're not doing that. Same. Instead, we are going to be talking about some great comics that came out this week and maybe some not so great ones. I don't want to say we're not biased here. We don't love everything. Sometimes we don't like things. Sometimes we have weird fights about one specific part of a comic book. Let's see if that happens almost immediately as we jump in with DC KO Boss Battle number 1 from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams, art by Carmine D. Giandomenico, Ronan Cliquet, Kieran McCowan, Pablo M. Collar. In this issue, we are spinning out of the DC KO event. It takes place right after the events of DC KO number 3, where we found out that the 4 remaining challengers, which are Lex Luthor, the Joker, Superman, and Wonder Woman, are going to have to face down the Absolute Universe Trinity, which is pretty messed up. But before they do, they got to gain some more Omega energy. They're not strong enough yet. So what happens is that the Gorilla Grodd and dude who looks like a giant elf that I'm blanking on the name of, the World Forger, is that who it is?
Sure.
Yeah, he was introduced during the Scott Snyder run on Justice League, whatever, I always forget his name. He looks like a large elf, let's be honest. Anyway, they decide they need to send them throughout the multiverse to challenge other folks. So we get a wild assortment of characters, including Vampirella, Red Sonja, Homelander for the boys, Annabelle from The Conjuring, that is not a joke, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat, am I forgetting somebody there?
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
Oh, Samantha Strong from Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees. They also bring in some challengers who are down because the goal is to just build up the energy, not necessarily beat them. I will mention we had Jeremy Adams on our show and talked to him about this book,
sure,
among
did.
Other books.
What great timing.
Yeah, very great timing. Go listen to the interview about that because we delved into a lot of these matchups and the reasoning behind it. But Pete, what'd you think about this mashup boss battle?
Well, first off, this was an awesome issue. It jumps off the page how much fun Jeremy Adams is having with this. I think he also made that clear in our interview with him. This is a blast for him. He kills this. This is fantastic. Now, this motherfucking bear has been haunting my fucking existence. And never in my life have I rooted for Lex Luthor more than I have in this fucking comic book. But other than that, I was having the best time. I thought this was really cool. I didn't want the Homelander Superman fight to end. I thought it was just so, the tone and all of it was just so cool. Also, I thought like the Joker sitting there with the creepiest doll known to man, I thought Joker would just like spin out, you know what I mean? But it was just such a cool take. All the different kind of pairings were just some interesting ideas. I mean, it was just jam-packed with action. I just thought this did feel like a boss battle. It was kind of interesting to see different sides of characters in these different kind of fight scenes. And I feel so gross for rooting for Lex Luthor.
Yes, this is very fun. This is what you want out of a book like this. I did really like the Samantha Strong Lex Luthor fight. No. The panel of Lex screaming and running away and being like, a bear with a knife, what's going on? It's very funny.
How Lex rolls up on the bear is so fucked up. I was just like, God, That
was great.
I almost threw my computer.
We talked about this on the show a little bit. I think my favorite part of the issue was Joker fighting Annabelle, because the fact of the matter is, if you've seen any of these movies, Annabelle doesn't do anything. She just sits in a box the entire stuff. Entire time, and things happen around her is the way that she works. So the way the Joker interacts with her, where she's not doing anything and he's constantly like, no, what's happening, was again very funny. It's very goofy, it's very silly, and that's been
it's fun
coming through this entire event. The only thing, and again, like, not to keep hyping up this interview, but I think Jeremy talked about this a little bit, I wanted more, because we just got like these little tastes of the fight, particularly the Homelander Superman one, where it would have been so much more satisfying to see Superman absolutely wreck Homelander. But instead, by the way, I should have mentioned, spoiler warning for everything here, everything kind of ends in a draw, which I guess you can understand because they don't want the Mortal Kombat characters to lose. DC doesn't want the DC characters to lose. So you got to kind of play it even there, so you don't get that satisfaction of watching Superman absolutely obliterate the worst version of him in the multiverse.
There's no fatalities. You know, once you introduce Mortal Kombat, toasty, you know, you want some, you know.
Though, when there's a second Mortal Kombat character shows up, that is very fun. I was like, cool, this is cool. And that's what this should be. The art is also good at it. I do actually think the Homelander Superman section looked the best out of any of them. It channeled Derek Robinson without being Derek Robertson. But good stuff. All right, and this is the first of many mashups we're going to get to the stack today, but why don't we move on to another big event, Ultimate Endgame number 2 from Marvel, written by Dennis Kapp, art by Jonas Scharf and Terry Dodson. The end of the last issue, we found out that the Maker had turned into a big tree that was now the entire city. The bubble was not open. Iron Man, America Chavez, Spider-Man, and Doom are trapped inside. Meanwhile, the Ultimates Network is fighting the supporters of the Maker outside. I don't remember how you felt about the first issue here, Pete. I know you haven't been the hugest fan of the Ultimate Universe, but what did you think about issue number 2?
Issue number 1 I liked. I thought it was interesting kind of setup, as I recall, but we talk about so many comics, maybe I'm wrong. But this one was super bleak and depressing. It was super sad. Future sucks, man. Holy shit. But The art's absolutely fantastic. It was also really cool to see Deathshead and Doom in the same comic together. As a nerd, I of both those things, it was kind of, I was geeking out about the fact that both of them were together. So, but yeah, those are my thoughts.
Can I give a comment like you, Pete?
Sure.
Very talky. This is a very talky issue, which is, Dennis Kapp is a super smart guy and a super smart writer, but there's a certain point where this felt like this was getting a little bogged down with the conversation that was going on. There's a lot of exposition going on inside of the city as Howard Stark explains what's been going on over the past thousands of years in there to Tony Stark. Meanwhile, outside, we're getting a lot of text stuff as the Ultimate Network updates people, and some of it is a lot of fun. There's some fun dialogue in there, but it ended up being a little overwhelming to me just in terms of the amount of text that was going on in the issue, which sounds crazy, but maybe it's the expectations of this is Ultimate Endgame. Everything should be on the line. Every issue should be the direst issue of all time, and I'm not quite getting that yet.
Also, you know, in case you're wondering, you know, JT Sizzle, who isn't with us, he's camping, and he's usually, you know, a huge, huge fan of.
He's camping with Jesus now. He died.
Oh man.
Heaven is a great campground in the sky. I always say. No, he's fine. He's on a trip. Justin, not Jesus. All right, Archie. Army of Darkness, number 1 from Dynamite, written by Eric Burnham, art by Bill Galvin. You can figure out what's going on here from the title, but the Archie kids head to a cabin, find the Necronomicon. Oops, they read it, and Deadites come out. But then we get a flashback and find out that Archie has been working with Ashley J. Williams, and there's some Deadites there, too, and that's going on. Pete, what'd you think about this mashup? There's been a lot of dark crossovers with Archie lately.
Yeah, this, first off, really cool cover. I mean, look at this thing. This is fun.
It's the Army of Darkness cover, but with Archie and Veronica.
Yeah. Just great. Great. Also, one of my favorite ships right there on the cover. So, yeah, I'm winning twice with this. Yeah, this is just hilarious and fun and a great use of characters and just hilarious to see kind of Ash in this world and what's going to happen and the fun of kind of the Archie tone to this darkness. So, great use of talent in this. This is such a fun idea, so well executed. I can't wait to read more, and the art is just so awesome.
It is weird seeing Ash. Ash rendered in a slightly more realistic style next to Archie, who is in the cartoony style. That gave me a little bit of cognitive dissonance. It's something that they play with in the Minor Threats crossover because the Minor Threats characters are drawn more realistically than the Archie characters, but I felt like they gelled it better than they did here. I don't know.
No. Okay. Weird.
Yeah, you don't care.
I just disagree. I want some kind of differential. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to see Ash totally Archified, so I like that there's a little kind of a barrier to him completely giving over to the kind of sunshiny bullshit, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, I definitely hear you. The weird part for me was the dogs, because, you know, Archie, everything. So I'm like, is that supposed to be real? And I was like, no, they're not real dogs, because they had that kind of seam going down the middle where I was like, what is happening?
Also, the flashback threw me a little bit. The fact that, like, they're in the cabin and then they go back to an entirely different story. I assume they're going to bring the timelines together, and that's fine. But it was a little hard to suss out how they connected in this first issue. But
so you're saying it was a little sus?
It was a little sus. Okay. But still fun. So there you go. Fun, fun, fun. Let's see if this one is fun, fun, fun. DC AEW, number one from DC Comics, written by Steve Orlando, art by Travis Mercer. Yet another intergalactic wrestling match. Here, the heroes of the AEW need to team up with the heroes of the DC. So finally, we're getting some overly muscled, costumed freaks coming into the DC universe. We didn't have enough of those, so that's pretty exciting. Pete, what did you think about this?
Well, what's funny is you said, is this fun, fun, fun? And if I can read my notes word for word, I said, fun team up. It's classic team up fun and great ideas and fun action. So it is fun, fun, fun.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Are you an AEW guy?
I do like wrestling. I'm not like so tuned in where I'm like WWE, WWF, like AEW, you know what I mean? Like, I kind of like it all at this point. And I'm not going to kind of like hate which, you know what I mean? But yeah.
I wasn't asking you to choose a baby. I was just saying, I don't know anything about AEW. So this is completely foreign to me. Oh, I don't know how much you know.
I know these a little. Characters. I know these characters. Okay. I just thought it was cool. Tons of action. Just kind of fun team up to kind of see them worked in these kind of units was cool.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this. This seems like I appreciate the fact that this is going to be sold at AEW matches. That's cool just on a get comics out to more people level. The art is good by Travis Mercer. Steve Orlando knows what he's doing here.
Yeah, sure
I did does. Appreciate that we got a heel turn at the end. I thought that was pretty fun.
That was fun.
I will say I'd be more psyched if this was DC X A and W because I'm more of a root beer fan than a wrestling fan, but you know, maybe next time.
Wow.
You okay, Pete? Your balloon just like
deflated. Just the A and W joke got me a little bit there.
Okay. All right. All right, Dad.
Did you ever drive out you know, when you were at Cornell, did you ever drive out to Cortland to that A&W drive-thru that they had
I've
there?
I've never been to an A&W.
Dude, you were so close. You were 15 minutes from it.
I messed up, man.
Oh, it was one of the greatest drive-thrus. They had the glass mugs that would frost it over.
Oh, that sounds
bring them
really
out
good.
To the car, dude. Oh. Oh.
All right, I got to go back. I got to go back.
Go back, man.
If there's one takeaway from our review of DC AEW, it's go to the A&W in Cortland.
Yeah.
Check it out. All right, Ultimate Wolverine number 14 for Marvel, written by Chris Condon, art by Alessandro Capuccio. Wolverine and Phoenix are on the trail of Ilyana Rasputin while we get her origin in the Ultimate Universe at the same time. And, oh, there will be blood. Pete, you seem psyched.
Yeah, this is great. This is such a cool issue. We're kind of hunting Ilyana here. So I think that they set up the fact that, like, okay, you know, there are 20 places that she can be. But, man, if I'm Wolverine, you got to go to the last place on the list because it's always the last place you look is where Ilyana is going to be. But man,
she's like your keys, man. She's always on the couch. Check the couch first.
You got to check the couch first. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Save yourself the time. I just thought this was just had like such a cool tone to the art and the kind of moodiness of Ultimate Wolverine. So, yeah, I just think this is artistically done and it continues to be kind of a fun idea. So, I'm having a blast with this.
Yeah, I think this is great. We've talked about quite a bit how Chris Condon extended the run of this past the natural end, but this is really making an argument for this kind of could have gone on for a while. It's beautifully drawn, really well and carefully plotted, and it's brutal at the same time. It's exactly what you want out of an Ultimate Wolverine book.
Yeah.
Next up, I'm going to guess this is one of your favorite books of the week, Pete. Dork, number one. From Image Comics by Brett Bean. This is the artist of I Hate Fairyland, breaking out in his own writing and drawing this. It is about a half-dwarf, half-orc who may bring about the end of the world. Pete, take it away on this one.
Well, this is just, first off, cool cover. Such a fun, light tone that the comic really delivers on. Plus the name Dork, I mean, come on. Dwarf and orc, that's just such a great idea. And then you got an overly violent shield. This is all my things combined. You got fantastic art, over-the-top action and violence, very creative, built-out world. Yes, yes, checking all of the boxes for me. I had a blast with this comic. I love the chicken. This is a total package here. They started with a really cool map. I mean, I couldn't believe all the things that were lining up for me in this issue.
Yeah, I like this as well. I think I was expecting...
Did you like the play on Dork?
Yep. I was expecting... I Hate Fairyland 2, so something a little more over-the-top comedic. And there are funny parts to this, but it is a lot more focused on lore and world-building in this first issue and prophecy. So, it was not exactly what I expected. But I do think the funny parts are fun. Like you said, there's a floating ghost chicken head. Who could hate that? And this seems like a nice character to be following going forward.
Yeah, exactly. You know who you're rooting for. And an eyeball shield that loves violence is just a fun choice. It's a fun choice.
It's a fun choice. Next up, I'm pretty excited about this one. The Nice House by the Sea, number 7 from DC Comics and Vertigo. Written by James Todd IV, art by Alvaro Martinez Bueno. The Vertigo part is the thing that, frankly, I am most excited about. I like this series. I like the previous series, Nice House by the Lake. But this is the first Vertigo book we're getting in the rebooted line. We're going to get new Vertigo titles every week for the foreseeable future, which is awesome.
Yeah, it is.
This one, though, is a continuation of Nice House by the Sea, which if you haven't been reading it, there are now two houses who are the last people in the world. And one house, the Nice House by the Sea, has decided to kill everybody in the Nice House by the Lake. And that's what we start getting towards at the end of this issue. This title, if you haven't been reading it, definitely go back to the beginning and read it from there. This is not a good jumping in point at all. But it is upsetting to read, beautifully drawn by Alvaro Martinez Bueno. Just nothing like it on the stands. It's great to have it back. And I do think, even though it is the 7th issue of a sequel series, this is a really good mission statement kickoff for Vertigo.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. This is a really cool cover. The art is just so amazingly beautiful. The colors are really impressive. The splash pages, just leaning into the art and helping it to tell this creepy, fucked up story. I just think that I can't say enough about the amazing art style. This is not my cup of tea because it is so intense. And, the last panel is really well done. Also really cool character guide in the last two pages, but creepy and scary as hell if you like that kind of stuff.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that, cools up to 8 times faster, and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed, plus free home delivery with any bed and base. Ends Monday. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Godzilla Infinity Roar, number one from Marvel, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Javier Garon and Iguara. Following up on Godzilla Destroys the Marvel Universe, he is now in space and been taken over and controlled by Null, God of the Symbiotes. And as we pick up, Godzilla is being used to destroy and take over the universe. Basically the plot of King in Black, that crossover, but, with Godzilla thrown over.
With Godzilla. As you do.
As one does. Pete, you're the Godzilla fan. You're wearing a shirt. You're drinking the beer. How's the comic? Was the hat trick?
Yes, it is. This is just crazy fun. Fun, over the top, huge ideas, very epic, so well executed. It melted my nerd brain. The whole Black Bolt thing was so cool. Then the kind of reveal at the end, like seeing Galactus like sitting there in that fucked up chair and then just being the Fantastic Four being like, hey, do you want to come to my planet and eat a giant lizard? What? This is insane. So cool. So awesome. It melted my nerd brain and I loved it. So this was just an absolute blast. And I think it's fun to see them taking big swings like this.
Here's my one problem with this book, Pete, and maybe you have an answer to this question. Mm. When Godzilla has the symbiote, it's like just sort of like a little ripped T-shirt on his front.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the symbiote covering him entirely. What's going on there?
Well, that's the thing. Godzilla is so big. Like, it was trying to kind of... But it ended up being like a ripped T-shirt. He's like, I'm so metal, dude. You can't hold me.
Oh, he cut off the sleeves.
Yeah, exactly, dude. He's Godzilla. He's like, dude, it's cooler with the sleeves. Like,
right.
Not
he went
there.
To see Null, loved the music, and he was like, oh, sick. I got to cut the sleeves off this.
I love this band so much, I'm going to buy the shirt,
It is kind of embarrassing that he's wearing the Null shirt to the Null concert. I got to be honest with you.
Well, what's going to be more embarrassing is when, Galactus shows up and he's rocking his Galactus shirt,
Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see.
Thundar the Barbarian, number one from Dynamite, written by Jason Aaron, art by Cuber Ball. This is the, I believe, first time ever this classic cartoon property has been in comic book form. Nobody correct me if I'm wrong there, but Jason Aaron is very excited about it. He's been talking about it forever, and it is set on a post-apocalyptic Earth that has been changed. So it's like Conan, but it's also Kamandi and a bunch of other things at the same time. Pete, you probably like this. There were a rat man and a barbarian dude.
Yeah, I mean, this was awesome. This was really, Jason Aaron is killing this. I was so excited. I remember the cartoon as a child, as a wee lad. This is just so well done. We kind of see Thundar the Barbarian kind of tied up and being misused. So mm-hmm. He kind of sets this trap and then his buddies join him and... it's kind of insane because, Thundar is a barbarian, and then there's this moment where he's like, hey, do you want to talk about your feelings? He was like, listen, woman, I'm here. Let's ride. I'm not going to talk about my feelings. I was like, ooh. But, yeah, it's also such a fun nostalgia bath that I'm very much enjoying, and the art is amazing.
As somebody who doesn't have nostalgia for this, there's a lot going on. That's my big takeaway.
It's a lot. There's, you would think like one of these ideas would be good for the,
Yeah, that's my only thing, is it felt
like... It's going fast.
Yeah, it feels like Jason Aaron was like, hey, do you want to come over and see my toys? And I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. And he's like, here you go. And he takes my head and shoves it right in his toy box. He's like, look at these toys. Look at them.
All of them.
All of them at the same time. I'm like, okay, maybe just show me a couple and ow, my face hurts, you know? Yeah. So... I'll read anything that he writes. He's great.
He's
but
great.
This was a little overwhelming for me, and I want to get a better handle on this world.
Maybe it'll calm down a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. but I guess we'll see. Superman, Chains of Love.
I can't wait to check out the next one.
Superman, Chains of Love, special number one from DC Comics, written by Leah Williams and Dan Slott, art by Iguara and Rosie Kemp. In the front story, the Creeper and Livewire are striking up a romance just in time for Valentine's Day. And in the backup story, a guy named Bill Zorro ends up on Bizarro World. I really like both of these stories.
Yeah.
I thought the front story... You know, I had just never really thought about the fact that the Creeper is a TV host and Livewire is a radio host. Just that basic idea of like, hey, what if we hosted a show together and then kind of fell in love? Is so simple, but executed in such a fun, sweet, nice way over the course of this extended story. I thought that was great. I thought the backup story... It's just, and I say this complimentary, is classic stupid pun from Dan Slott, where he's like, what if there was a guy named Bill Zorro? What would happen to him? And it's very funny what turns out.
Bizarro World. Yeah.
It ends in like a very dark Twilight Zone-y place at the end of the story, which I was very surprised by. But again, I enjoyed both of them. I thought this was a, to use the term you always use, a fun package.
Yeah, it's a great package, well executed on both stories. It's weird to root for a Creeper and Livewire, but they do it in such a good way that makes sense and is cool for characters. And what a fun kind of switcheroo, kind of a twist on a twist idea with the Bizarro World. And I thought both were really executed well, and the art was fantastic. So, yeah, this, if you're looking for a little fun and kind of lightheartedness and some nice couples, you should check this out.
Storm, Earth's Mightiest Mutant, number one from Marvel, written by Murawa Yodele, art by Frederica Manson. Though this is a number one issue, this is just continuing Murawa Yodele's run on Storm, so there's a lot of stuff going on. She is part of the Avengers now, as well as related to the X-Men, and also she is now a Storm goddess after the Thunder War storyline. And in this issue that is picking up with that villain, from that arc, she needs to make some dealings with him. Meanwhile, there's a lot of other things going on in the world. And oh man, there is no other book like this on the stands. It is just absolutely unique. The storytelling is just working on an entirely different level. And it finds time to be really funny in the middle of all of that, which is always surprising to me.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I loved how calm and interesting the tea ceremony was, and then there was just total madness around it. I just think that this is an interesting idea. It's great to see Storm doing so much and doing more. So I'm very happy with everything that is happening, but I'm interested to see how this is all going to kind of unfold. So I think there's an interesting setup in this. And, I'm looking forward to how it kind of all breaks down.
I also really like Frederica Manson's art on this issue. Lucas Wernick has been such a cornerstone of this book. To have somebody else always gives me a little pause. But I think this is a really nice compliment. He draws a good Storm. The action is good. Like you said, tons going on. It is a similar feeling to what I was saying with Thundar the Barbarian, where you're like, things happening all the time, but... I think the difference here is it's showing you these little snippets of things that slowly come together in a fascinating way by the end, which is very surprising, I think. Just the way, I know I get a lot of heat for using this word, but the way this issue is structured is pretty fascinating. Night City, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Matt Kent, art by David Lapham. This is showing us a new superhero who's very tired all the time, and he's at the end of his rope so much that he almost kills his arch enemy. And when he finally does go to sleep, he wakes up as a normal guy in a normal world. What's going on here? That's what we explore over the course of the issue and then over the course of the series. Yet another banger from Matt Kent, I would say. The thing that he's been doing that's really fascinating is, like, we're going to talk about another book later on that is very much his riff on Legion of Superheroes. Mm-hmm. This is his riff on, like, Superman or Shazam or some dual life character like that, but coming up with his own property around it and really just exploring what it means that this guy can never sleep and what happens next. It's gorgeously drawn by David Lapham. I just thought this was great.
Yeah, agreed. A solid first ish. The art style is just so cool. I'm a sucker for watercolor, so just love the kind of style of art. Bunch of twists and turns. What is real? What is dream world? Crazy last panel. Yeah, I hope he isn't dead because, man, that would be a tough start to a great idea if it only goes one issue. But, man, just a really solid first ish.
Poison Ivy, number 41 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by David Gianfelice. After killing a lady last issue, Poison Ivy's in jail and waiting to find out what happens next. That's where we spend most of the issue as Jenna from HR tries to get her out. Great. I kind of wanted to throw this in the middle here because we always leave it for the end. And we're like, this series is really good. So I wanted to see if we had any more to say before we get really tie-tie. But I will, again, just say, as usual, this is one of the most solid books on the stands. There's some great moments throughout. Love everything that's going on with Jenna from HR. And also, spoiler, but there is an appearance by Harley here that I thought was a lot of fun as well. And I knew this was coming because they spoiled it in solicitations. But the thing that happens at the end of the issue I thought was pretty great as well. And I'm excited to see where that goes. So if you're not reading Poison Ivy already, you absolutely should be. It's just month after month, one of the best books on the stands.
Yes, I agree. It is amazing. The art is unbelievable. I was really kind of like, how is Poison Ivy going to get out of this, especially after she straight up murdered, death killed somebody? And the thing that happens is something that we see in comics and in cartoons sometimes where it's like, what if the bad person runs for mayor? And I'm like, ah, wow, okay. And what I'm learned here is I should shut up because this team is phenomenal. And like you said, this has been like 41 issues of bangers. So like I should shut up and not say anything because everything they've been doing is awesome. So we'll see. But this is the first time where I was like, I don't know how on board I am, but I'm still going to show up for 42 and I'm sure it'll be great. So.
All right. Magic and Colossus, number one from Marvel, written by Ashley Allen, art by German Peralta. This is the team that was on the Magic book, I believe, or at least Ashley Allen definitely wrote it. I don't remember whether German Peralta was the artist. I'm sorry about that. But this is taking place in the current X-Men continuity. Colossus is kind of bummed out lately. He has gone through some hard times thanks to being on X-Force. And that's where Ilyana encounters him as he's tracking down some weird magic in Russia. They're also having flashbacks to their younger days. I love these characters, but what do you think, Pete?
Yes, I also very much enjoy these characters. This is a crazy issue. Magic catches Colossus, like, sacrificing himself. And she's like, yo, bro, like, yo, get a little dark on me, which is funny for her to say, with all that she's been through. So, well, both of them, actually. But, man, it really grabs your attention. So great job for a first issue, kind of setting a new kind of status quo line for these two, but really amazing art, big swing. So I'm interesting to see like how this is all going to kind of unwind and unravel, but great last panel. Cool reveal. So I'm excited for more.
What I really liked about this was after doing such a great character study on magic in the previous series, this flips. Even though magic is still the headliner here, it is about Colossus and it's exploring Colossus in a similar way. I'm curious to see where we net out because, you know, I can still remember very clearly Colossus was always the sweet, nice, gigantic guy on the X-Men, and then they spent years just hammering on him, taking away everything, trying to turn it, we've talked about this on the podcast before, into Dark Colossus. So I wonder if this is going to be about netting him back to a place where he can, like, paint again, you know, or something, or be, like, a little bit happier. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that certainly seems to be what they're exploring with him. So I'm excited to follow that journey.
Yeah.
Supernatural Valentine's Day Special, number one from Dynamite, written by Preeti Cheeber, art by Pasquale Qualano. In this issue, the Winchester brothers are exploring a weird town where nobody is in love, and it turns out, well, I won't spoil what it is, but it might be some sort of monsters, maybe. This is great. This is a really great, super fun one-shot that channels the supernatural tone and the characters, absolutely nails them, but brings in an entirely different flavor of supernatural mystery than I think we're used to from this sort of property. The art is great. The mystery is interesting. The creatures are great as well. I had a real blast reading this.
Yeah, same. This was a touching special, tons of action, nice ending, great art. I really like this.
Yeah. Great. There we go. Done. Absolute Superman number 16 from DC Comics, written by Jason Aaron. Once again, art by Juan Ferreira, picking up off the cliffhanger of the previous issue. Superman has met the Hawkman of the Absolute Universe, and here we find out a lot more about him after his brief appearance in the Absolute Evil special. We find out his origin. We also find out his different philosophy from Superman. Another banger issue of this one as well. I am really intrigued by this new Hawkman. Yeah. I love what they're doing here, but even more, I love what they're doing with Superman now that he is doing Superman stuff and saving people. Seeing the way that he treats this Hawkman is fascinating. And man, Jason Aaron and Juan Ferreira are just a great team.
Agreed. Yeah, cool cover. This is just what a crazy fight. You know, Hawkman just being a dick, you know, the back and forth between him and Supes, the tension. Then the other story, the horrifying twists and turns. Everyone run for your life birthday party. That shit was crazy. Yeah, great art in both stories, especially the Supes fight panels. The splash pages were insane. The page where Superman like punches Hawkman like down levels into the subway, just fantastic. Mm-hmm. Just comic book pages, so cool, so well done, so much action. Yeah, Absolute Superman is hitting.
Yep. Great stuff. Next up, Avengers 35 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Sergio DeVia. Lots of stuff going on with the Avengers as they're teaming up with the Twilight Court to take down Kang, who has activated the Grail, which will destroy the cosmos and create the next cosmos, and meanwhile, enter the Ashen Combine.
Ooh. Yeah, fun
Pete,
cover.
Pete?
Oh, fun cover. Fun-ish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the good guys kind of tricking the bad guys here. Oh, a little trickery. So kind of interesting. It was kind of weird to see, but awesome art. That plan was pretty cold as ice.
Real quick, who's your favorite member of the Twilight Court?
It's tough to just, you know what I mean?
Oh, okay. All right. That was too hard because they're all great. What about the Ashen Combine? Who's your favorite member of the Ashen Combine?
I mean, how do you choose just one?
Yeah, no, that's true. That's pretty even. Yeah. Okay, how about the Avengers? Are they in this book as well? Because that's not really.
Nope.
No, I it's mostly, hard to, yeah, I don't, mostly the Twilight Court of the Ashen Combine. Man, I really want to like this every issue, and I do like the art. And I agree with you. I thought the trick, the way that they beat the villains, was pretty well done. That was fun. But we just haven't gotten the Avengers in this series. Yeah. Like, they are just... It isn't as bad this issue. Like, I think... by the way, I want to be clear. Like, I like Jed McKay's writing, and I've just written some great stuff.
Sure has. Legendary writer.
Something clicking here with this Avengers run, and I think part of it, I keep thinking about those scenes of the more recent Mission Impossible movies where they're like, hey, what's going on with the entity? And then 10 people all stand around and basically say different lines from the same monologue, all chopped up between them, so they're all essentially the same character. And that's what's going on with the Avengers in this book. They're doing the exact same thing all the time, and it's driving me a little nuts. But
well, it was kind of, you know, where it was like, hey, Black Panther, you can't do this because then you would have to sacrifice yourself, you know? And it was like, or we could just have them do it, right? And then it was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
Yes, it is. Anyway, we'll see what happens. We're heading towards the end with this one. Thundercats, Lost in Time. Hobbies. No, sorry about that. Thundercats, Lost in Time, number one from Dynamite, written by Ed Bryson. Art by Chris Campagna, Alessandro Miracolo, Gerardo Gambone, and Vincenzo Federici. And in this issue, we're following the team from Thundercats Lost, who end up, I believe, on the Silverhawks planet, where they're holding Chitara, leading to the upcoming Thundercats Silverhawks War. Pete, you got to be losing your mind over here in your nostalgia bath childhood. You feel like a child again because children. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, first off, just like JT Sizzle is the huge Silverhawks fan, so it kind of stinks not having him here for this comic. But, yeah, this is awesome. I mean, Thundercats weren't kind of in this, but it's setting up this huge war, which is exciting. I'm just rooting for Thundercats because that was the show I watched and didn't really watch.
The Thundercats are in it. It's just the Thundercats. It's different Thundercats from the Thundercats Lost comic.
I realize that, but I'm saying, like, the main Thundercats, all we get is Chitara as the kind of cameo, and she doesn't look like she's doing too well in this one. So, but yeah, next issue, I cannot wait to kind of get into it. This kind of really sets things up. But yeah, as far as my childhood goes, this is just fun. This is just...
I generally like the storytelling. Thundercats and Silverhawks are not my thing, but I do think there is a fair amount of danger here, and Ed Bryson knows how to set up intrigue and mystery. What really killed me was the amount of artists on this book. Like, the art kept switching every couple of pages, and it really threw me. Hmm. It's just a bummer. Like, I know it needs to happen sometimes, but as soon as you see, what is it, four different artists on the book, it sets up alarm bells a little bit, and they might be good individually, but it definitely starts to feel like, well, we had to get this product out, and that's kind of what it is. So that I didn't love.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Chitara pages looked very good. I don't know who did those, but those were very good. Batman, number 6 from DC Comics, written by Matt Fraction, art by Jorge Jimenez. The big cliffhanger at the end of the last issue was the lady that Batman was on a date with found out that Damian Wayne was his son. And this issue hilariously starts with her being like, oh, God, that must be tough, him running off with Batman all the time, which I thought was such a great move that is, like, so steeped in comic books, but somehow I didn't see it coming. And the rest of the issue has Batman fighting Monster Man and doing lots of Batman stuff, as well as bonding with Tim Drake, who's decided to leave being a Robin. Damian isn't happy about it.
Dude.
Man, this book is just great. It's just the tone that Matt Fraction is putting in here is so much fun. Jorge Jimenez's art is excellent every issue. I'm having a blast.
Yeah, Matt Fraction's a hell of a writer. Cool cover. Yeah, we get the monster smash here. But yeah, I just thought this was so kind of tugging at your heartstrings, like the amazing heartbreaking story, and the Damon stuff as well. I mean, Batman just sitting on the steps was heartbreaking. Love the art. Huge, intense last panel. This is just very fantastic kind of stuff, and Matt Fraction is really kind of diving into some interesting, cool takes here that I can't wait to see kind of play out. So, this is kind of you laugh, you cry. It's better than Cats. Batman, check it out.
Catman. Planet of the Apes versus Fantastic Four, number one from Marvel, written by Josh Trulio, art by Andrea DeVito. In this issue, it does what it says. The Fantastic Four head to the planet of those damn dirty apes. And there's some twists, there's turns. The most hilarious part is they get there, courtesy of course, the Red Ghost, who sends them to an ape planet. You know what? I got to be honest. I was not looking forward to this. I was like, this sounds dumb. How are they going to make this work? Planet of the Apes is very much its own thing. I understand Fantastic Four as explorers. But you know what? This was very fun and funny and light, and it made some ridiculous moves by the end of the issue. I'm into it.
Awesome. I'm glad you had a great time.
They blew it up. They blew it up.
Yeah, the art was fantastic.
Oh, did you not like this?
I don't like Planet of the Apes. So,
what don't you like about it?
All the apes.
What don't you like about that?
I don't know. I don't know what it is.
You don't like apes?
It just, I can't get into it. I don't know. I've tried numerous times. And the famous birthday kind of with JT Sizzle, where, you know, I'd rather see anything else. But yeah, mm-hmm. I just.
But you like the Tim Burton one, though, right? That was good with Marky Mark?
Nope. No, none of them.
All right.
So
no, that one was bad. Don't say that one.
You bring up and put them in comic book form. I tried.
Interesting. Man, this is making me want to watch the newer Planet of the Apes movies again because they are so good. All of them. Every single one. They're great. Interesting. All right, Event Horizon. You got to love this, Pete. Event Horizon, Dark Descent, number 5 from IDW, written by Christian Ward, art by Tristan Jones and Christian Ward. This is the final issue of this prequel to Event Horizon, where a bunch of flesh blobs are doing their flesh blob thing on this hell ship. So there you go.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this is scary as hell. Space hell, space demons, amazing art, but this is creepy and so fucking scary. The welcome to hell, come find me line is going to haunt my fucking nightmares, man. Thanks for putting that into my nightmare bank. Oh, God. Just a loved one coming up to you
how close physically is your nightmare bank to your spank bank? Are they like next door to each other? So sometimes you're like, I'd like to make a withdrawal. And you're like, oh, no, this is the nightmare bank.
No, I never mix up my banks, man.
Don't want to take a deposit for the wrong place. This is great. I thought the series was, it was like reading a living nightmare the entire time, front to back, every single issue, which is exactly what Event Horizon should be. Love those final pages by Christian Ward, just because I love his art, but Tristan Jones' stuff is great as well. And I love how this, without completely spoiling it, I love how this found a satisfying end to this story about this other crew without contradicting what happens at Event Horizon. And that's a tricky thing to do, to like find that correct pocket there. But I thought this was great. I'm really looking forward to, and I'm sure you are, Pete, they're going to be doing a sequel that's coming out. So we'll read every issue of that. And great. I'll be under your bed reading it for you.
Fuck you, man.
Absolute Green Lantern, number 11 from DC Comics, written by Al Ewing, art by Janoi Lindsay. In this issue, we are focusing on Joe Mulan on the run. We're picking up some stuff with Obsidian and how Hector Hammond is controlling him. And a lot of plot stuff going on. After several mythology issues, this is a big one for just like some action and strategizing. I'm really enjoying this series, and I'm enjoying it more every issue. I'm just getting further and further into it. What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, Green Lantern's not my favorite, but this absolute Green Lantern book has been really crazy and cool. A lot goes down in this issue. The fact that we stopped action to kind of be like, hey, wait, I was out for a while. How did I eat? And then it was like, well, because we're Green Lanterns, we can like pass it. I was like, oh, this is gross. You're like chewing up his energy and like bird feeding it to him, Green Lantern style.
If and I you was could like, do that, though, wouldn't you do that? Like if I could chew up your food and then put my hand on you and give it to you?
I just
that it was, be more efficient.
Well, I just think it was like, why are we stopping action to get into the minutia of how Green Lanterns can feed each other? Was just like, I was like, this is weird, man. But the real hero of this is the art. As we see on this amazing cover, there's just some fantastic like splash pages and really great kind of like last panel, like just the colors and the art is just really impressive. So, yeah, fun last panel. This is cool. I just got a little weirded out by the, hey, if you're a Green Lantern and I'm a Green Lantern, like I can crush up energy and like sith it to you. And it was like, what the?
Anyway, I like this, and I have no problem with the eating thing. Amazing Spider-Man, number 21 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by John Romita Jr. and Todd Knock. In this issue, Norman Osborn is still pretending to be Spider-Man, and he is under attack by a bunch of spider slayers, as well as the Hobgoblin. Meanwhile, he has a bunch of Spider-Mans and Spider-Gwens and whatnot backing him up. All leading to the return of Peter Parker at the end of the issue. Another great issue of this run on Amazing Spider-Man. The characterization that Joe Kelly brings to Norman Osborn, I think, is excellent. The only little knock I have on it has nothing to do with Todd Knock, but rather that John Romita Jr. is kind of drawing Spider-Man like Peter Parker instead of Norman Osborn. Like, there was a couple of issues back when he first showed up that he was a little thicker. And I thought that was interesting to indicate that it's a different character. Here, the body type seems the same as Peter Parker. So I don't know.
First off, how dare you attack John Romita Jr.'s art? But yeah, I just think that, you know, fun hug at the end. But yeah, this is just this whole kind of Norman Peter, but Norman in the Spider-Man outfit, it kind of really, or costume, was, it's a little too weird for me to get into, but I can appreciate.
Well, but it's over now. I mean, the whole point of this arc was proving to Norman that he can't be Spider-Man. And by the end of this, he's like, no, I'm the Goblin. That's who I am. And that's going to happen. So a little bit of a spoiler for future, but we know that he is going to prepare for that. He knows that's going to happen at some point. I'll throw it out there. They've been teasing pretty heavily. Amazing Spider-Man 1000 is coming down the road. Ooh. Probably that's when that's going to happen. But I thought this was a nice brick in the road there towards that point, that inevitability of, yeah, he's going to become the Green Goblin again. We know it's going to happen.
I mean, it's very cool of him. I mean, if Green Goblin showed up to me and was like, hey, can I try on your costume and try to be a good guy for a while? I'd be like, hell no. But Spider-Man was like, all right, cool, man. Yeah, check it out.
Oh, yeah. That's great, man. All right, want to move on then, talk about The Twilight Zone, number 4 from IDW by Nate Powell. I got to say, I haven't been in love with this series, but every issue they put an artist or writer or writer-artist on there where I'm like, oh, I got to read this, though. Oh, this is really good. And this one, Nate Powell, is so good. And I'll tell you what, I'm glad I've read this because I thought this was the best issue of the four so far. This is focusing on a guy who is celebrating his birthday on a boat with his twin sister and her boyfriend. And they don't like him because he's a real asshole. And they find out they have a glass bottom boat they can swim through, and some weird stuff comes off of that. Not only is Nate Powell's art absolutely gorgeous, particularly the water scenes are beautiful, oh, yeah, but this is the one that like 100% nails that old black and white Twilight Zone tone. It's perfect. It's exactly what I wanted out of this book, and I haven't quite been getting yet, but this one gets it.
Yeah, this one really nails it. Cool cover, just great art. The black and white art sets such a great tone for this idea that's so well executed. I heard the theme music playing. It felt like such an episode of the show. So I feel like this really nailed it in all aspects. And I thought it was cool and twisted and well done. So, yeah, great job, great team. They killed it with this ish.
DCKO Night Fight number 4 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Dan Mora. In this issue, Batman has been presented with his ideal world where Damian has made everything better. He has a grandson. He's growing older. But the heart of Apocalypse, he knows, is torturing him with all of this. And he's going to have to get out some way, somehow, and get back to the DCKO tournament. Man, just a great series. You know, we've talked about this incessantly, but DC has been doing such a good job with DCKO tie-ins, giving them each their own feel, their own purpose. And this one, Joshua Williamson really dove down on the emotional life of Batman and his relationship to the Robins, which has made it work. It is a spinoff. It does tie into the main series, but it's really an exploration of Batman, and that's what's made it great. I love this. Plus, Dan Mora art, always good.
Agreed. Yeah, really cool cover, amazing art, kind of a heartbreaking story about Batman fighting Damian. And yeah, I'm excited to see what's going to happen here. Touching family panels with Batman. So yeah, love this. Love what they're setting up. Nervously scared and clutching my pearls as we move forward here.
Uncanny X-Men number 23 from Marvel, written by Gal Simone, art by David Marquez. Two things going on simultaneously. One, Gambit is getting corrupted by the Eye of Agamotto that he has, and the X-Men have to take him down. Meanwhile, inside, the Outliers are being told a story that parallels the main action by the dudes who own the house that they're living in, Haven House. So a couple of things going on here leading to a surprising end of the issue. I thought this was really well done and fascinating juxtaposition between the two stories that were going on throughout the issue. I thought the fight with Gambit was really brutal and heartbreaking. Yeah. So one of my favorite issues of the series so far.
Yeah, this was great. Fun last panel. Yeah, this was cool. You know, I wasn't sure what happened, but neither did our heroes for a little while here. I was pulled out a little bit when they were like, what's wrong with you? And he pulls out like this vampire cat from his coat.
Oh, it was just a regular cat that he was going to eat. He's been eating kittens. They said that. They said that you eat like strays and
creatures. Don't say stray because I'm setting up here the fact that, this last panel, the monsters want New Orleans and they can't have it because Stray Bullies and his amazing family lives there. And that's not cool.
I think it's going to happen. I think New Orleans is going to become Monster Town USA, but I guess we'll see what happens. Maybe
Stray's
got
the
move. You know who could probably try to stop them is the Punisher. And then he could turn into some sort of cool dude. Is what I was going to say. Nope. Frankie Castle. Space Scouts, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Matt Kent, art by David Rubin. This is the final issue of this series, I believe, that has been following what I mentioned earlier, sort of a very faraway riff on the Legion of Superheroes. Excuse me.
Don't die.
We started with a reality show contest to find a hero, but what it turned out was the actual heroes who were strong enough lose the contest and get recruited for a forever war, which is what we deal with here. It's clearly Matt Kent using this idea of future superheroes as a way of talking about the forever wars that America and other countries find themselves in. And I think that's just so smartly done and so present for a lot of the things that we're talking about right now. And also David Rubin's art was just great throughout. This is another great series from Matt Kent. I know I'm in the kit tank, Justin's in the camp, but I am.
Yeah, fun dossier pages.
Wait, how about, can I coin, I'm going to kindergarten?
Wow. Wow. I mean, you can. It's really creepy, but you can say that.
No, like Billy Madison, your favorite movie.
It definitely is up there. Fun dossier pages in the back of this. Amazing art. Really, really love all the colors. Just the panel work is just really amazing. This is solid stuff. I really enjoyed this. I thought creatively this is well executed. And it's just a blast.
Speaking of blasts, Pete, what a week for you. Godzilla number 7 from IDW, written by Tim Seeley, art by Henry Piscetia. Eventually, every comic book is going to be a Godzilla comic book. But last issue, Godzilla died. Oof. And now one of the members of G-Force seems to have the power of Godzilla. Yeah. Can turn into Godzilla, or Godzilla can turn into him, or something like that.
That's always been my dream.
Sure. I really like this, and I don't want to be too much of a jerk, but Nicola Zizbeja, who was doing the art of the first 6 issues, it was a little too kinetic. Sometimes it was hard for me to follow the action. Henry Pasecha's art is a little clearer, and I like that better. I feel bad about it, but I was able to follow the action here. There's some good character work where, is it Jason, the name of the kid, who has Godzilla powers, ends up at a club with one of his team members. They have a little bit of a flirty night. There's some good romance going on there. All the stuff that's going on with these Godzilla powers is interesting. So I like this. I thought this was like a new good jumping on point for the book. If you're interested, lots of fun.
Yeah, T-Seal's constantly killing the game. This is no different. Cool cover, cool stuff. You know, it's a lot of talky, you know, because it's all about the humans. But then once the human turned into Godzilla, then I was like, oh, man, I got to go back and reread this thing. So, yeah, this is badass. Yeah, I love the highlighter green for Godzilla. I think it's a good look for him. So I'm excited to see how this is all going to kind of unfold from here.
I got a catchphrase for you if you want to use it, Pete.
Sure.
Ready? How about, club me over the head because Seeley's got another banger.
I think it's a little long, but all right.
And yeah, work with it. You're better at this than I am anyway. All right. Last but not least, the Department of Truth, number 35 from Image Comics, written by James Tynion IV and Scott Snyder, art by Martin Simmons and Joshua Hickson. In the front story, we are dealing with Black Hat finally meeting the Department of Truth, or at least Lee Harvey Oswald. Meanwhile, everybody else who has defected from the Department of Truth or been redacted or kicked out are starting to form their own organization to fight back. And in the backup story, we get another Elvis riff by Scott Snyder and Joshua Hickson. What'd you think about this one, Pete?
Yeah, it's too bad that JT Sizzle isn't here because this is his kind of jam. But yeah, this continues to be just, I mean, the art on this is another level. You know, people are going to be talking about art classes and bring up this book because it is so unique and cool the way it kind of tells a story. But I thought they were having some fun here with White Hat versus Black Hat. I mean, what is this, spy versus spy? But yeah, Alva's stuff was great. I really can't say enough about the art. But yeah, this is sometimes over my head. I creatively, it's just worth checking it out always.
And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Of the day.